This is FM 90.1 KZFR Chico, listener supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. You are listening to Love in the 21st Century on every Tuesday night from 5 to 6 p.m., hosted tonight by myself, Tamara Wickma, and Adam Mose. Love in the 21st Century is a talk show with live call-ins, interviews, and discussions on the philosophical to the practical look of love, from romantic relationships to connections with humanity. One-third dating insights, one-third self-love guide, one-third compassion training. And tonight, we will continue on our theme with love and Mother Earth. And Adam Mose will be paving our way, or paving our path into the wilderness.
Unpaving. We're going to remove the concrete and walk barefoot into the wilderness together.
Beautiful. So tune in. It'll be a surely inspirational hour. If you're interested in calling in, our phones are not working today, so we're not answering, but just letting you know that if you're inspired to call, that you can call in the office and let us know there, 895-0131, but we can't get you on the air today. But we're going to get started here with a song inspired by Adam. Beautiful song. Thank you so much for bringing that to us, Adam. And would you let us know who that artist was and what the song name was?
That's lovely, Pia. And I first heard her on the pavement, on the curb, in Chico Farmer's Market with some folks. She was singing like that song.
Amazing.
And I was like, wow, that's something you don't hear every day. But of course, she's gone on to be a major artist.
Mm-hmm.
And I chose that because I wanted to very much like take this opportunity to remind you that indeed you're on the mother. You're currently, everyone hearing this, you know, is a earthling on the mother, and that remembering that gives you some advantages, some groundedness, and some energy to work from that a lot of folks, unfortunately, don't have access to sometimes. So I wanted to, you know, like all of a sudden, through this very ethereal kind of technology, it's a communications technology which our parents had. You know, this is like the oldest, the actual transmission of radio waves being received. But also you can hear this on any old device now because it's streaming. But this thing of remembering that we're on the earth and we're part of the earth and we're of the earth, and that the bondedness that we get from that primary relationship with our mother, the love, the why we say Mother Earth, it's not a coincidence. And it's my understanding that the indigenous peoples had a felt sense of bondedness, you know, the mother was alive and there for them, and that in our technological or in our sociological, the different goals and the different programs that we set for ourselves take away from that. But they can't entirely. And I have to, you know, admit, I just came back from 3 days in the woods, and it's a wonderful feeling, you know. The longer I'm out there and the quieter I get, just the more patience I have for being back here and serving folks, and it's just is like pure medicine, really. But we can tap into that any time. So I'm just like, right now, we're all together here in some sense of temporal, spatial connection right now. But remember that you're on this oneness, you know, that we're all part of. And she's loving you. She's supporting all the life on it. So just give her a little love back. And then you feel the bond. You open to it. Open to being in the state of being bonded with. So that's my offering.
Quite a beautiful offering there, Adam, that you're bringing us to. And maybe you can share some different ways in which you feel folks can start to nurture that bond with Mother Earth.
Yeah, well, then there's the simple thing of growing things and living things and I think it's inescapable in a sense, like the most feel practical, you know, if you just get out, take a little walk in nature,
mm-hmm.
make it a little space to look at the something growing, you know, it's really simple. But to go further into it, I think it's kind of something that I've cultivated in a way. I remembered this as a kid. You know, I go camping with my parents from a very early age and walking in nature. And it's just like, oh, always felt great. And then I was remembering some of my mom's made-up bedtime stories. She wasn't a big storyteller, maker, or whatever. And she had like one particular one that always went a certain way. It's like, Adam was walking along in the woods and he met happy squirrel friend. And then it's like really simple. But I'm like, holy cow, yeah, that was the only story I needed. It's like, camping with my family, it just made that early kind of connection. And then, you know, we were so blessed here, particularly our radio radius. We're all in Northern California, mm-hmm. extraordinary national forests, mm-hmm. Mendocino National Forest to our west, I believe, was the first national forest. Teddy Roosevelt started the initiative to preserve the wilderness. And it's really brilliant. That's really some foresight. And then we have the Plumas National Forest and the Lassen National Forest, which I want to rename to Waganupa, along with the mountain. That was the Yahiyana name for that mother mountain, Waganupa.
What does that name mean?
Waganupa is the mother mountain.
Mm.
And there's a whole story about Peter Lassen I don't know about, but you know, I don't like talking about people when they aren't here to defend themselves, so mm-hmm. we won't go into it. But you know, he just bought it,
mm-hmm.
and so I'm advocating for its return to its original name. Shasta has a lot of power because it's still its indigenous name,
mm-hmm.
you know. But
I did not know that. The invitation, though, to participate more with nature, and I do hear you in saying that we are very blessed in the Northern California region to be easily so connected to nature, but also I think that it's an easy thing to forget that we are nature.
Right.
And that we are too intrinsically going through these cycles, and that by spending time with nature, and I liked what you said, just like watching a plant grow. So if you don't even have the time, because I'm like, the reality is that the average individual that lives in the United States works more time than they do, than they don't.
Mm-hmm.
So whether that's resting or recreational things, but having something in your homes, having something in your office that's growing, one, it's beneficial for many other reasons for your psyche, but to experience that cycle with something that's living with you, and to remember that you too also go through those cycles.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It's pretty amazing.
Yep, we can't escape it. Nature is our nature.
Mm-hmm.
And the most far out technologically that the humans have ever gotten, I think, you know, was the space shot. We went to the moon, and then every single one of the astronauts had this profound metanoia. Different than paranoia. Meta is like a change, like a profound change of mind. And that's really also around that time, coincidentally, when the ecological movement really kicked off, like that idea of looking at Earth, like humans getting up, looking at Earth as a whole from space, was the clincher. Like, yeah, that is beautiful. That is just so unbelievably captivating. You can't take your eyes off it. This is all the astronauts. They're not like, yeah, space, out to the moon, looking. They weren't, you know, it's like, look right back and like, oh my God, you know.
Right.
Got to get back to that.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be good.
Right.
So, in that sense, that nature is within each and every one of us as our basis, as our biological basis. Coincidentally, that's also connects in with my medicine. The Chinese medicine comes from a naturalist philosophy of Taoism. And the Taoist masters were all about, you know, going into the wilderness and getting the essence of the energies from the wilderness. You know, they go by the waterfall and just inhale the negative ions. Now we know what was going on there, but they're just like, they say qi, there's a certain vitality mm-hmm. from these wild places that you get, and it recharges you. It connects you in with a greater spiritual energy. So please, if you get the opportunity, avail yourself of these locations, but leave only footprints and take only pictures. This idea of really, you know, honoring the natural environment as much as you can, and not having any gooey-eyed ideas about it. Nature can be very rough. You know, you go in and be intelligent and safe and prepared and all this thing. You know, I'm really interested in, you go into the woods safe and you come out safe. That's important.
Definitely.
But, and just in terms of us, like that, when I think of, oh, natural disasters and the weather being weird nowadays, it's like, oh, that is just the perfect reminder that once again, number one is Mother Nature. I've only lived through one big earthquake. There was one in LA, 1971. I was a little guy, but we had a really big one. And then I was like, yeah, man, Mother Nature. She's reminding us, you know, she's the most powerful. We live and we die, you know, on the planet based on the nature. And, you know, we're blessed. Also, Northern California, we have the potential for earthquakes, but in terms of other natural disasters and things like that, it's few and far between. But that's, nature can be really like severe reminder that that's the biggest power mm-hmm. that we have, that we sustain our lives with. And you know, we forget that, and we try to, you know, convince ourselves otherwise, you know, with my technology and with my brilliance and self-made creations or whatever, I can subjugate nature and go beyond. But even that is an idea that's produced from your nature. So we can't get away. We don't need to.
The idea that we can get away from nature?
Right. Mm-hmm. That we can conquer nature. Like mm-hmm. the misapplication of the scientific method.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of run up against, you know, oh, it's like, oh, we're going to solve all the problems, all the human problems with science. Science was meant to just alleviate all the human problems, but it hasn't done that.
No.
Things are a lot more comfortable, of course. Lifespan, all that advantages that we have. We want to avail ourselves of that as well. But the really kind of root problems, this feeling of not knowing where one belongs, there's no other cure than recognizing where you actually are already.
Absolutely. Well stated. Because that question continues and perpetuates regardless of we have the modernalities that we do have now versus, you know, being in a more riparian life.
Mm-hmm.
And thinking about the kind of the what you were painting there of like the, as I would think of it, as like the Western medicine mixed in with this more like natural cycle rhythm of being and sort of finding the balance in between. Because yes, we definitely, like, from my perspective, there's definitely advantages that we've all gained because of our use of technology in this world, in the creation of things. But to find that balance and, or I think the pendulum's going a little far to one side in terms of the use of technology overall in our modern lives. And so just bringing it back to the other side and just being really, feeling really inspired by what you had mentioned earlier about spending 3 days in the wilderness and doing that on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, I think that that is really powerful medicine.
It's good to you know, get yourself prepared and know how to do it. And I still haven't gotten myself like fully comfortable. I was cold. It was colder than I expected.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this kind of like automatic pilot that we run ourselves on in terms of the day-to-day activities. A lot of times when you're good at a job, when you're at your profession and it's, you've done it enough times, there's a lot of your job which is pretty automatic. You know, the real creative, innovative part of your job where you have to be totally present for is this small portion, especially driving. You know, it's a bit, after you've got it mastered, a bit trance-like. You know, people say, oh, I got on the road, turn on the radio, and then I arrived. I can't remember all the things that I did. So it's like this autopilot. It's like the life is happening, and we're kind of passively observing it, even though we're doing it.
Is that what that is?
That's what I'm...
Trance?
That's kind of a trance.
I've never heard it explained that way, though it makes a lot of sense.
And when you're out in the wilderness, it goes away. You know, every step, every choice is going to keep you healthy, keep you safe, you know, and keep you experiencing what's out there. So it's like, I've never been in that environment before. I've been scouting, going to different wilderness areas. And it's a different terrain, it's different critters, and there's always different weather situation going on. So like this total aliveness, there's nothing on autopilot. You know, you just gotta be aware. And you know, you have a great thought, yeah, I gotta check it. Was that really a great thought? I don't know. You know, if I take this walk around here, it's going to be dark before I get back. And all these ways that you can challenge yourself, but it's like living. It's happening in the present moment. The nature, the experience in nature is such that it throws you back into your present moment, the thought, and the spaces in between thought.
Mm-hmm.
The silence. I had this amazing sunrise session in Bucks Lake Wilderness, and it was like sunrise over this lake, Okay, confession. I was actually pretty cold. It was pretty a rough night. Woke up a bunch of times to keep the fire stoked. And then one of the times I woke up, I looked and there's like this little bit of a silhouette forming behind the trees on the other side of the lake. And I'm like, okay, that's my dawn. I'm not, you know, it's still going to get colder, but not a lot colder. That's the light of the sun returning. And then just the going and sitting at the lake edge and watching the lights slowly come up. Spectacular. Like, what does the rocks and the trees and the lake think about this? What are they saying about this? And I was like, okay, I want to be with them. And the silence out there, just so beautiful. Just, and Indigenous peoples, Native American folks, they knew that. They had that. If you want to hear Great Spirit, you just go a little ways away from the village and you listen. Mm-hmm. And it's deep silence, that deep, like, alive silence. Fantastic.
Mm-hmm. It's a magical time, the sunrise and the sunset, and your experience is reminding me of being up in Concow at the Sacred Movement Festival, and I was spending at a coffee booth, so I was always awake about 5 a.m. before everybody else was. It's really my favorite time in the morning, and for multiple reasons, but the sun just crisping the air and peeking above the trees. I can pick, like, it's on my phone, actually. The picture is on my phone now I think about it. And I would say that my official opening time is when the sun comes over those trees.
Mm-hmm.
And just how beautiful it is, right, you know, and how clear the air is. And also how happy the people are that are awake at that time at festivals because they genuinely like being awake at that time.
Yeah.
Because if they're not, they would not be awake. So it's just a really, you know, all-around beautiful experience. And Concow Lake is an amazing, beautiful place as well.
Yeah.
Underappreciated, I think, in some ways.
There's this other aspect of it being a different experience of time.
Mm.
That when I get out there, I have to, you know, go off more organic kind of time, bodily time, you know. Mm-hmm. Is it time to eat? Is it time to walk? Time to make camp? And all of these things are, you know, they happen in their own time.
Right.
And
it's interesting that your story is reminding me of being a little girl, my dad teaching me how to tell time by the sun.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's how the only way he really told time. He never wore any watches. And he was very much into being in the outdoors. And so we went camping like almost every weekend. And I think my mom is going camping. Like, we're all going camping soon. And for the first time in like 20 years, that we've gone as a family.
Mm-hmm.
So be pretty amazing experience, but how much a part of my childhood that was, and how exciting it was, like, getting the camping box together and getting things together and getting ready to be just with the family and with my brother. And it was interesting because my brother and I probably had the most just like tenuous relationship when we were at home.
Mm.
But then when we were camping,
it was interesting,
like,
right?
Totally bonded. Like,
yeah, yeah,
this,
yeah.
Like, exploring, and we were companions. But
yeah,
at home, it was a very different experience.
Mm. Yeah, we gotta get out to the wild.
Mm-hmm.
To get down to your real, natural kind of relations.
Right.
And I wanted to go a little further and say how that feeling of connection and bondedness in itself, I believe, is the healing, like, is the balance making.
Mm-hmm.
That when we're talking about the earth, immediately folks are like, oh, there's these horrible problems, the impacts that the industrialized society, consumerism, materialism, and capitalism, just rampant. These isms, three isms, which curiously are never separate from one another. They're not, you don't put them all together and call them one thing, but you know, they mutually interpenetrate one another. So anyway, the problems environmental, we say, like brought about by that big ism, schism, have their natural solution in the reconnection and the discovery of one's nature. So the kind of intelligence that the nature, that Mother Nature being part of, has, will be able to be expressed when you're in that kind of recognition, you're in that kind of bonded state.
I would agree. I would say I can think of that experience when camping with my brother, and also like the juxtaposition of being in town with my brother and sort of just being lost in terms of our relationship and like the things that we would get into because of like what was considered to be like fun and entertaining. Like it's almost an infinite exploration in the wild. Yeah. But at home it was kind of like the more getting into things that we weren't necessarily supposed to be doing, or him experimenting, putting me inside of things that were too small because I was a really small child. So, you know, that didn't always end the best, but I think the regular participation in going camping, like you were mentioning, that regular practice of doing something like really, like kind of re-bonded us each time.
So, wow. Yeah.
Really great invitation to participate and just to spend regular time out in nature, whether that's actually camping or just going, making it a day. Like I spent all day on Sunday out of the house and it felt amazing. It was not something that I have done. I mean, I've been camping and I've done those things recently, but just like for being in town, I guess. Like I'm usually getting a lot of the things done at home, so it felt really good to just say goodbye to the house for the day and be outdoors and visit 1 mile and hang out with friends and just go on bike rides. It was so nice to be on a bicycle.
And they go together. When I'm out in the woods and I come back, I'm like, I have so much interest and energy for washing the dishes. Like, to be able to just pull this lever and the hot water comes out right there is one of the miracles of modern science we take for granted. And looking at things in a more fresh way when you take a break from all of your media and the technological comforts.
Right.
So I had this wonderful, okay, now this like a coming of age experience in my 20s. I don't know if I mentioned this before. We might have talked on this, but I was in Sonoma State University, which had a psychology department set up by these fantastic, radical Berkeley psychologists who, like, broke away and were able to set up this whole humanistic, transpersonal, existential, like, third force psychology department. They get to run it like the way they want it. It was so beautiful. So this was in the 80s, and one of my professors, Robert Greenway, who taught the psychology of wilderness experience. And we would meet throughout the semester, like a class, but it was a group process. We would just get together and like experience one another. Like they had these in the 70s and the 80s called like encounter groups, T groups, sensitivity training. There's all these different names, but it was just like we got together and we're kind of getting tribal. We're getting familiar with how we relate and to a certain degree working through our stuff. We were, you know, triggered by certain relationships with people, and we have a safe container where we can explore that. So we did that for the whole semester, and then it ended. Our final is 2 weeks, nine men, nine women out in the Yolaboli Middle Eel wilderness. And it was wilderness in the sense like all, we were very intentional about what gear we took out. It was minimal. We just went fully minimalist. And, you know, we had like these beautiful circles and consensus. Everything went in terms of counsel and consensus. Robert Greenway had been doing it for like 20 years or more, 30 years. He's been leading these. But eco-psychology, he's at the forefront of the eco-psychology movement. But he's just one voice in the council when it comes to it. There's no leaders. The council is going to work, and we make a decision. Anyone can make a proposal. Anyone in the crew can make a proposal. It's seconded. We all agree on it. Then it turns into action. And that's really exciting. You know, I can make a proposal, and it's going to affect everyone. And everyone agrees with it. If there's any no, then the no has the floor. Without any restrictions, the no can ask questions, the no can get more information, you know. And it has to be, one no means it doesn't go. So it takes a lot longer, obviously, but it gets a lot smarter because you have the collective wisdom and intuition of all of the members. So we formed this little functional tribe and lived out there for 2 weeks, and it was genuinely life-changing, you know. That's something that really, I can say, you know, who I was before that experience and who I was after, there had been some genuine quantum leap. But it also included 3 days of alone time, where everyone went to different areas and was secluded, which is kind of what I recreate now once a month, you know, going solo into the woods. But we also had 3 days of gender camps. It was very, very powerful. And it ended in this, the gender camps reunited over this game, this shamanic gambling game that was, and perhaps still is in some quarters, practiced by the California Indian tribes, called the bone game, where you just guess, you know, oh, which hand is it? You have a little bone, you hide it in one of your hands behind your back, and then you put it out in front of you. It's like the simplest game you play with the kid, but we played for high stakes, and we played, you know, to like demonstrate the men's power and the women's power. It was so much fun. It lasted all night. We started, you know, like in the afternoon. It didn't end till sunrise the next day.
Wow.
It was incredible.
How did it demonstrate the men's power or the women's?
It came out. Like, because there's a line, the way one of the things, the rules of the game, there's an actual line on the ground, and one side is on that side of the line, and the other side is on the other side of the line. If you go across the line, you forfeit. You lose. So, the pointing, the guessing, everything, and the hiding happens, you know, on your side of the line. But beyond that, you know, and the hands have to be out there. It's been many years. The details of it. But I think there's three hiders So, six fists hiding three bones. And it can be all in one person, and it can be, you know, it's distributed.
Oh, wow.
But the and it's gambling, too. The ladies initiated it, you know, they came down. We discussed it a little bit, but they said, yeah, we challenge you to a bone game. What do you think, guys? And we're like, yeah. We, you know, we did our little council thing, and we're like, yep, we're in. what's the wager? We didn't want to get too radical, so we said it's a meal. You know, you have to prepare us a dinner. We don't have to do any cleanup. We don't have to do anything. You know, like when we get out of the woods.
Right.
That's what the losing side will provide.
Mm-hmm.
So we kept it quite. And then they said we have to throw in the bucket. There was one bit of technology that one of the brothers snuck in. You know, it had been totally minimal. Everyone has just the same stuff, but he brought in this collapsible bucket, and you could scoop up the water from the creek and warm it up a little bit and then clean yourself with it. And that became like the big hit. That was like the coveted item. So we had to throw that one in as part of the wager. Magic. Total magic time.
Do you remember which one won?
Oh, absolutely. You don't forget. But we went all night, and it came out to be a tie.
Wow.
But the odds, we kind of worked it out later, and there was something wonky, you know, because we were studying statistics. It was part of my whole psychology training, but statistically, it was completely wonky. There was like so many more correct guesses than, you know, should be if it was genuinely just 50-50. So the men had their magic, they brought it. The women had their magic, they brought it.
I'm looking forward to a future bones game. I need to learn some more about this.
Yeah.
This shamanic game.
Deeply, right.
Sounds like a lot of fun. So before we started today, you had mentioned about taking the show in a different direction than maybe the average nature lover would take it. So do you want to elaborate a little bit on that?
It's just what we were talking. The feeling of bondedness and being able to not just admire nature at a distance, you know, but like whatever it takes for you to really get yourself in it and feel your participation with it, that was a part of it. And then this other idea that activism, you know, like we want to protect the earth. It's a curious thing. Like nature, in the really deep sense, I go out, okay, this is where I want to go out on a limb. We say, earth doesn't really need our protecting. Nature and earth and these things is deeper and more encompassing than however messed up the humans could get. So discovering and remembering with the bondedness of nature provides this view. You can see there's something deeper and more vast, more grand, and I'm hoping that humans remember how to evolve with that and work with that. intelligently. The intelligence of nature is can be wrathful, you know, like why we got weird weather all the world over is like this correcting, self-correcting process that nature has. So there's this thing like, oh, we got to wake up and protect the mother. And I think all of that happens as a natural course when you remember your roots, remember your connectedness.
So beginning with the bonding and the connecting first, rather than the rushing to save.
Right.
So just having like that foundational place first, like remembering that connection. And when you were saying remembering, I'm thinking of Katrina Dejebroff when she was here talking about the weaving earth and how a big part of that is about remembering. And she like uses, you know, I picture her grabbing her arm and like pretending to put it back into the socket, and like how that is really a lot of what we're doing is just reconnecting and remembering that we are connected and part of this divine planet that we live on, that provides and nourishes for us and endlessly, really. And to start there and build that relationship and then see where that naturally evolves, because maybe there is a particular area in which you feel drawn and inspired to advocate on behalf of. But it's always good to build that connection first.
So many facets of the solution, so many ways that the remedy is going to be applied. And individuals have different callings and strengths that will, you know, be guided. If you get that groundedness and that intelligence that comes from nature, it's gonna happen more effortlessly. That's the thing. That the nature is powerful and energetic, but works in the most efficient way. So the changes, the ways that you can work in your environment with your relationships, I think, is the place to start.
Absolutely. And just thinking of what you shared earlier about going into nature and how the indigenous folks knew that, like, to really listen to spirit, what you needed to do is just go away from where their people were and listen to the silence, because in that silence comes great inspiration and guidance and, you know, more grounding than we could imagine, really, in any time and space when we're thinking about it. But just going there and experiencing that, and how beautiful of an invitation that is to just go and to sit and to be in awe of the magic, which is what the life that we're surrounded by. And just the other day, we went paddleboarding. A group of us went paddleboarding down the Sac River. And it was just so beautiful to be essentially in silence with a group of gentlemen and be listening and watching and mesmerized by this beautiful, amazing sacrament river that we have, that is just there waiting. And we were able to see some beautiful storks and river otters and just a beautiful, amazing reality that we are surrounded by. Luckily, no sturgeons, because I'm a little bit terrified of the idea of running into a sturgeon, which is a really large ancient fish that can grow up to be 11 feet tall and apparently like to live in the Sac River. So I'm happy that I didn't encounter any of that magic, but I honor them being there.
When I was up in the Bucks Lake Wilderness, that's where I was, I found a bear sleeping place, and the bear had long since woken up and gone to lower elevations. I was up among the manzanita, and all the berries are still very tart, unripe, you know. So the big critters are down lower where this stuff is ripening earlier. So intelligent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Bears, they are just, you know, trying to get a good meal, just like the rest of us.
Dig up a little grub.
Yes, absolutely. So, what are some thoughts here as we are transitioning to the next show, which is Ecotopia? I want to let you know to stay tuned. They're going to be talking Nature Talk with you, too. Something wonderful, I'm sure. Steve and Susan Schutte, they're on every Tuesday from 6 to 7. They discuss environmental issues with nationally renowned authors and activists. EcoTalk, it's your local link to a global network of folks who know and care about the health of our planet. So that is coming up very soon, 6 o'clock. Stay tuned, 90.1 FM. Always a worthy conversation.
So wonderful to be here.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Adam, for being here. And if you are inspired to share something with us about the show, feel free to find us on the Facebook page on the good old World Wide Web. It's the Love in the 21st Century on Facebook. And if you don't do that whole internet thing, that's okay, too. You can call 895-0131. That'll get you the office number, and you can leave us some lovely thoughts there, too, if you want to let us know what you're thinking, or if you have ideas about the show that you want to suggest, topics, people to talk to. We are all ears and invite you to be part of this global conversation on love, because that's really what it's all about.
It is.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about love.
Yes.
And I also wanted to mention the Weaving Women's Wisdom Gathering coming up. Happens out there in Lake Concow.
Absolutely.
And I'm putting something together kind of funny, tentatively, because the ladies got it together. The men are just playing catch-up. So I wanted to make an offering for a wilderness experience for men, making men's magic.
Yay!
Happening over the same. It's the September 16th weekend. And it happens to be a full moon, so it'd just be beautiful to be out in nature then.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful. I love the inspiration to bring the balance in the practice, because it's really, you know, it's about us each doing our work. It's about us doing the work as groups, and it's about us all doing the work as one whole community. So, yeah, Adam. And yes, Weaving Women's Wisdom, it's coming up in September. You can find more information online. They are selling tickets now, and it is a beautiful, amazing bonding experience, both with the natural environment. As I mentioned, Lake Concow is a beautiful place. And if you haven't been there yet and you live in Chico, you're just going to be asking yourself why when you're up there. You're like, why is it taking me so long to get here? Why has nobody told me that it's here? So you will be surely falling in love with the place as much as the people. So the bonding with the planet, bonding with the lake, bonding with the nature spirits, and bonding with the amazing people that are drawn to such a gathering. So, yes, look it up, Weaving Women's Wisdom. And if you're a man, check out what Adam's, the inspiration Adam is sharing, which is
making men's magic.
I love it. And you can find Adam on Facebook.
Yep.
So, yeah. Or you can also call us on the old telephone here, 895-0131. With those same questions, and we will connect you in the right direction. Thank you so much. We'll be back next Tuesday at 5 o'clock. Love in the 21st Century is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by the Chico's newest restaurant, Rallo's West at 234 West 3rd Street in the heart of downtown. Rallo's West offers small and large plates, Maryland-style shrimp, blue crab cakes, a wine bar, charcuterie, and artisanal cheeses. Rallo's West is open from 5 till 9 p.m. until 10 on Friday and Saturday. For more information, visit them on Facebook or by calling 636-4468.
Here with a few choice words about the Veepstakes. Now that we have two presumptive nominees and the campaign has entered its begging for money like you're raising bail for your little sister stage, it's the only game in town. So this week, let's concentrate on who Donald Trump should pick as his vice president. First off, old friend Sarah Palin, because the two make such an adorable couple. Bernie Sanders would give him someone with legislative experience and really stick in Hillary's craw. Ted Cruz, because the chance to see the two of them snarl and bark at each other for 4 months would become must-see TV. Ted Nugent, because nothing says Second Amendment rights like an aging, crazy, long-haired rock and roller. Ted Turner, because that's the only other Ted I could think of besides Ted Levine, who played the serial killer in Silence of the Lambs. And then he was the lieutenant on Monk. Texas Senator John Tower. Sure, he died in 1991, but the posters would all read, Trump Tower. And free publicity is free publicity. Boris Johnson, to nail down the wackiest hair in history ticket. Phil Robertson, the elder of the Duck Dynasty clan, because then the Donald would be the voice of reason. Mike Tyson, because he was an early endorser and could translate some of Trump's more complex policies. Kim Kardashian, because her butt counts as two electoral votes, and come on, you know you want it. Caitlyn Jenner, because that would really double down on the woman card, and confuse liberals. George Lopez, to play the green card, and if he turns it down, give it to Carlos Mencia to really tick him off. And finally, Chris Christie, as a reward for climbing so high up the Donald's butt, he could be arrested for impersonating a suppository. For KZFR Radio, I'm Will Durst.
Don't miss Jim Hightower, Will Durst.